This podcast contains situations and scenarios that some listeners might find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
The Queensland Police Service acknowledges Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the first Australians. We recognise their cultures, histories and diversity, and their deep connection to the lands, waters and seas of Queensland and the Torres Strait. The Queensland Police Service respectfully acknowledges First Nations peoples as the traditional owners and custodians of Queensland. We pay our respects to them, their cultures, and to their elders, past, present, and emerging.
I'm Assistant Commissioner Catherine Innes of the Queensland Police Service, Crime and Intelligence Command. The members of my command work tirelessly to make Queensland the safest state, protecting our community from serious and organised crime. In this podcast series, the Crime and Intelligence Command will provide insight into a number of challenging cases and the effort, perseverance, and innovation required to get the final breakthrough. Importantly, I encourage you to collaborate with us. You may be the person who provides our next breakthrough. Together, we can prevent, disrupt, respond, and investigate.
Welcome to Breakthrough, the official podcast of the Queensland Police Service, Crime and Intelligence Command. I'm investigative journalist and author Matthew Condon, and for decades I've written about crime, from cold case murders to serial killers, to the workings of the criminal underworld. Breakthrough takes you, for the first time, inside the Queensland Police Service's Crime and Intelligence Command groups, and gives you an insight into a range of extraordinary investigations, from missing persons cases to online romance scammers to a multifaceted investigation to bring down a serial sex offender. In each episode, the QPS will share aspects of its case files and allow you to peer over the shoulders of real-time investigators in their relentless pursuit of justice, in their quest to bring answers and solace to victims of crime, their families, and the community at large. The podcast also encourages you to get involved, to come on board with QPS investigators and try and resolve outstanding mysteries and unsolved cases. You may just be the person who holds that final vital clue that will lead to the solving of a case. You could be the listener who has that one critical piece of information that unlocks the puzzle. Breakthrough invites you to collaborate with the Queensland Police State Crime and Intelligence Command, and we'll explain how you can do that at the end of each episode. This is Episode 1. Who is Poona Paul?
So this is the spillway. Here it is. The ducks have flown off in fright. I'm just making my way down this old dark grey concrete, leading down to the flatbed of the spillway where Poona Paul's body was found. It's remote, it's bleak. Let's hope the further we push that we can establish Poona Paul's identity and resolve this for his surviving family once and for all.
A man is curled in a fetal position, sleeping on a bed of towels, his head resting on his small backpack. He's wearing a red baseball cap. He's alone here at the eastern concrete spillway of the Poona Dam, just north of Nambour on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. The dam is an idyllic catchment. Black swans ply the surface of the water. It's surrounded by hobby farms and grazing cows. At the concrete spillway, the sleeping man's worldly possessions are scattered around him. Bottles of water, an open pack of cigarettes and cigarette lighters, empty medication blister packs, and his hand is holding a ceramic cup. But this man is not asleep. He's been dead for several days and is in an advanced state of decomposition. Who is he? Police investigators don't call him a John Doe. They feel he deserves something better, something that will give him some sort of dignity. They call him Poonapal, after the body of water where his life ended.
Detectives have been trying to put a name to this face. The man's decomposing body was found at Poona Dam in Nambour on September 9, 2008.
Cause of death was put down to mixed drug toxicity.
But who was he? DNA and fingerprint tests proved fruitless. The only clues, a leather satchel, some cigarettes, the man's distinctive arm tattoos, and these composites made at the time showing a brown-eyed John Doe aged 45 to 60.
As part of the review, we have engaged an external forensic specialist with the hope of uncovering some new leads. The result of this advanced DNA analysis called phenotyping has generated two leads. One is that the male person may have New Zealand ancestry.
Just before midday on Tuesday, September 8, 2008, a Southeast Queensland water employee was working out at Poona Dam, what's called an embankment dam, that catches water from a tributary of the South Maroochy River, north of Nambour on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. The dam is ungated, which means that when it fills to capacity, water simply exits the spillway. Its surface covers about 42 acres or 17 hectares. It is not open to the public. You can see the dam itself from Image Flat Road. From the gate, there is an unsealed track to the south that skirts the dam and leads to a thicket of trees and the actual spillway.
I've just arrived at Poona Dam. It was a long drive north of Brisbane, turn off to Nambour, the beautiful old cane town, and then just a few kilometres outside of Nambour, through some beautifully lush country, semi-urban, horses, cattle, dairy cows, and lush green, absolutely beautiful. Let's go out and have a look. It's time to check it out.
On that September morning in 2008, the water worker noticed a man curled in a fetal position on the concrete apron of the spillway. He thought the man was asleep, despite the hour approaching midday on that spring morning. The official went about his work. Returning to the spillway an hour later, he noticed that the prone man was in the identical position he'd last seen him. The worker called out. There was no response. The official approached. He instantly knew the man was dead and called police. Today, the creep of modern suburbia has encroached on this tranquil place. But back in 2008, it was a long way from nowhere. Marg, who lives close to the Poona Dam, remembers that shocking day when the man's body was discovered.
You're a local in this region?
Yes.
And you were living here when the man we call Poonapal was found on that day. Can you describe to me what happened?
I woke up in the morning and looked out the sort of out the back through the trees and could see police cars and marquees and...
So. Not something you'd see every day here, is it?
Oh, no. It's a very private and secluded area down here. So, yeah, it was a little bit eerie. Just making sure that everything was okay. I sort of walked partially down but didn't get too far down till we were stopped. So,
What did you learn about what the police were doing there? Was it shortly after or what did you learn about that?
Oh, no, it was quite immediate knowing that... person had been found.
Yeah.
And I suppose that made it even a bit more eerie because back in my house isn't very far away from where it was. Local police worked really hard to try and identify who the person was and find family, but the years have gone on.
There are many mysteries surrounding this case. Did the deceased man know about Poona Dam, given its relative obscurity at the time? Did he know to take the southern access road to the concrete spillway? Had he been there before?
First time I've ever seen Poona Dam. It's an absolutely beautiful body of water with black swans swimming on it. It's almost inexplicable.
Yeah, it's a secluded dam. It's not overly known publicly as a watercourse dam. It's a reservoir dam for overflow for other dams up in the hills. you see a few locals walking their dogs and that sort of thing around the space, occasional bird watchers, but it's not hugely frequented by the public because it's quite solidly fenced off and the gates are chained and locked.
When police arrived at the dam that day, they observed the body and took an inventory of the scene. This is what they found. A quantity of prescription medication, a black leather men's Jag wallet that contained the plane's video library card from an outlet in Kingaroy, a town 207 kilometres west of Nambour, an empty satchel, four cigarette lighters, an open pack of Winfield Red cigarettes, a pair of nail clippers, three pens, a travel pack of tissues, and two hand towels. In the driver's license window of the wallet was a card that read, "Smile, have a nice life." His hand was clutching a ceramic cup with water still in it. The satchel itself was distinctive. Brown leather with two carry handles and an outside zip pocket. Emblazoned on the pocket were the words Fox, as in Fox Film and Television Studios. The body was fully clothed. A double XL Duchamp long sleeve black shirt, an extra large pair of Oz Sport grey tracksuit pants, a size 105 to 110 Rio light blue and black checked underpants, white, orange and grey ankle socks, and a pair of cougar white, navy, silver and orange sand shoes. He was wearing a red baseball cap. There were no signs of trauma, and police believe Poona Paul may have taken his own life. An examination of the body revealed that he had been dead for a few days, given the pooling of bodily fluid and liquid. A subsequent autopsy found that Poona Paul was 185 centimetres tall and weighed 102 kilograms. He was balding and his hair was straight, short and grey. He had no congenital or acquired deformities. There was a mature 95mm oblique linear scar on the right lower abdominal quadrant, indicating he may have had his appendix removed some time ago. He also had tattoos. On his right shoulder was an unrecognisable character and a woman wearing Indian headdress, and on the left, images of a shark and an eagle. The autopsy also revealed that Poona Paul died of mixed drug toxicity. Various prescription drugs and alcohol were found in his system. At the time of his death, he was also suffering from congested arteries to the heart. Police could not know then that they were at the start of an epic journey to discover the identity of this person. How could a grown man, possibly with children or even grandchildren of his own, simply slip through the cracks?
Do you want to be part of the team investigating and working to solve cases like this? Queensland Police Service is hiring. Head to policerecruit.qld.gov.au for all the information and incentives to join the QPS. That's policerecruit.qld.gov.au.
I'm Detective Senior Constable Belinda Ferguson, and I'm attached to the Missing Persons Unit.
Like many young police officers, Senior Constable Ferguson began her career in general duties, served briefly in the sugarcane town of Mackay in North Queensland, then was transferred back to Brisbane, where she was promoted to detective. She decided to try her hand at the Missing Persons Unit.
So a part of our role in that unit is we review all the new missing persons files that come in each day. So I enjoyed, I guess, the investigation from that point to have a look, a different set of eyes over things, I guess, with that investigative background to establish if there's perhaps any suspicious element. I was enjoying that role and helping the general duties officers navigate when I did think there was something suspicious in the background, and we had some good results quite early on whilst I was doing that.
Each morning, Senior Constable Ferguson and her colleagues review missing persons files for the previous 24 hours. There are 30 to 40 fresh files per day in Queensland. The majority of people are found quickly. Some cases, though, over time, overlap with the Queensland Homicide Squad.
I imagine that your work would have to be by its nature collaborative in that you are seeking and open to advice and suggestions from other officers, and that would be a very important part of your work.
Absolutely. So Missing Persons Unit, we're based out of the Homicide Office in Roma Street. So we're not out on the road. We're there to guide and assist the ones on the road. So we work hand in hand with them and offer assistance and guidance and, I guess, investigative strategies where required.
The Poona Paul case, while not a homicide investigation, is unusual in that it appears nobody ever reported him missing. It's like he never existed.
Now, the case of Poona Paul, let's talk about him. Is this one of the older missing person cases on your books at the moment?
Not so much an older... Obviously, in this case, Poona Paul isn't missing. It's a unidentified human remains, which is another responsibility of missing persons. So we review the unidentified human remains to see if we can match with any of our missing people. We have a number of unidentified human remains as well, which some date back quite some years. But I guess this one's unique because, I guess, 2008, although is some time ago, but it's, I guess, in the great scheme of things, it's not that long ago. And it's a whole body, and no one's ever reported him missing that we can find the report, and not through lack of trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating in the respect that he's not missing, but he is missing because what is missing is his identity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the objective. On a human level, tell me what you think about him in terms of the actual ramifications of why he is in this position at the moment, and that is there has been no missing person report. I'm not sure if that's unusual or not in your line of work, but it suggests that no one has missed him, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does suggest that. Someone knows him, whether it's immediate family, flatmates, mates from the pub, someone would know this person, and nobody has come forward to report him missing. Generally, we'll call an unidentified body a John Doe, or just unidentified body or unidentified human remains. But I guess over time, he's been almost personalised by the investigators on the job and almost affectionately known as Poona Paul.
The amount of work Queensland Police have put into the Poona Paul case is staggering. The only possible identity clue found on his body was a Kingaroy Plains video library card. The card provided no link to its owner, as it was issued prior to 1998 and all records at the video store had been destroyed. Police had also made inquiries with a myriad of institutions, groups and businesses, including the local men's shelter in the vicinity of Poona Dam, mental health and drug rehabilitation centres, hospitals, community mental health units, private hospitals, motels, caravan parks, and two truck and taxi companies. They found nothing. Locals were door-knocked and were unable to assist. Poona Paul's fingerprints matched nothing on the QPS and national fingerprint databases. There were no matches on facial recognition software held by the Department of Home Affairs. Police painstakingly sought a match for Poona Paul's eagle and shark tattoos and found no matches on 105 pages of website hits for similar tattoo illustrations. Clothing distributors were tracked down, but a source was not identified. Year after year, police pushed on with their investigation, putting up posters at the Sunshine Coast show, which included a photo reconstruction of Poona Paul's face. But nobody came forward.
You ask yourself those questions of, why has this never been reported? And it could be for matters of, like, unfortunately, families do sometimes have that lack of contact and fall apart. And it could be that someone suspects he's moved somewhere or done something else. He could have a family that just don't even realise that this is what's happened.
Then, in March 2019, almost 11 years after Poona Paul's body was found curled up on the spillway of that suburban dam, police tried another tack.
So my name's Scott Chapman. I'm a detective sergeant from the Queensland Police, currently attached to the homicide unit cold case team.
Detective Sergeant Chapman has had 20 years' experience in the QPS, and for the last decade, he's worked in the homicide squad. It was in 2019, however, when news went around the world that the use of investigative genetic genealogy had cracked a decades-long hunt for a serial murderer and rapist in the United States. It caught Detective Sergeant Chapman's attention.
A plea today from the man accused of being the Golden State Killer. Investigators believe he could be responsible for a dozen deaths and at least 50 rapes. Investigators use genealogy websites to track down the suspect, the same databases millions of people use to find out about more on their ancestry.
That huge break in a cold case terrorizing California for decades. Police say they now have the Golden State Killer in custody.
And they use DNA testing to find him. So many families are relieved this morning.
Detective Sergeant Chapman had an inspired idea. Why not apply this forensic DNA technology to Poona Paul? It would be the first case using investigative genetic genealogy in Queensland law enforcement history. If you could track the identity of the Golden State Killer through a family tree, then why not Paul?
From looking at that case and doing some research into the companies that were utilising that technique, I became aware that they were solving about one a week through genetic genealogy in the US. And for this particular case, it was more of a progressional thing. When you have an unknown male sample or an unknown sample at a crime scene, you go through your steps to try and identify that. And the first step is running it through our Queensland database. The second step is through the national database. And if those come up with no hits, then potentially you can go a bit further and do a familial sort of database search where you're looking for relatives of that sample in offender databases. That came up with no hits. So I then progressed on to sending that DNA profile to Interpol and asking Interpol member countries to run that profile against their databases. And again, no hits. So it became obvious that the next step was to try this genealogy route.
Detective Sergeant Chapman knew he was going out on a limb with this relatively new investigative path, but believed it was worth a shot, despite the hurdles it presented.
This is uncharted sort of stuff. There's no precedence, and anything new takes time. A lot of approvals from coroners to send exhibits overseas because, well, if you're talking a homicide case that's unsolved for a while, it will go to the coroner eventually. And this case being an unidentified deceased, it sits with the coroner as well. So, yeah, getting coroner's approvals through our DNA management unit, all those sorts of things take time.
So exactly how does this genealogy route work? Millions of people around the world voluntarily upload their unique DNA to genealogy and heritage sites to find lost relatives, establish their ethnic origins, and even try to work out the potential risk for hereditary diseases. A mitochondrial test will determine a person's genealogy through the mother, and a Y chromosome test will trace genealogy directly through the father. Every person's DNA is a treasure trove of information. Someone like Australia-based genetic genealogist Louise Coakley takes those statistics and feeds them into those enormous ancestry sites, a veritable ocean of DNA data, looking for a genetic association. And those that do show an association, however partially, might establish a family relationship. Further meticulous research could then lead to a person's identity in a family tree. In the Poona Paul case, the QPS engaged Parabon Nanolabs to undertake genetic genealogy analysis. The analyst was Louise Coakley. I spoke to her about her investigation.
I'm a genetic genealogist and I started researching family history more than 25 years ago, and I started learning about the use of DNA testing, genetic genealogy, from about 2010 onwards. Since then, I've been completely focused on DNA testing and genetic genealogy and applying the DNA results to family histories to infer relationships between people, because that's what genetic genealogy is. It's the combination of traditional genealogical research and historical records combined with the results of DNA tests, and they're specific DNA tests for genealogy. They're not the older style tests that police have traditionally used. And we infer relationships between individuals and families. And so that's how we can identify people. 7 or 8 years ago, I started helping people to identify the unknown parents. So adoptees, foundlings, child migrants who, you know, had falsified records, things like that. So I would use their DNA and look at their match lists and reverse engineer their family trees to help identify the unknown parents.
So in a way, you're a sort of family secret buster.
That's right. I haven't heard that term before, but yes, it is. Yeah, so it's a huge puzzle and you're putting the pieces together with isolated little tiny bits of DNA.
By 2020, Louise had turned up some new information. Her research revealed that Poona Paul appeared to have family on the North Island of New Zealand. Police weren't foraging through family trees looking for a suspect. They were on the hunt for a relative who might have some knowledge of Poona Paul's prehistory and finally give him a name. Now, they had a cluster of potential relatives and a location, specifically the port city of Gisborne in the Tauranga area.
So the DNA was pointing to the Ellie family, Brian and Vivian, and their children. One hypothesis with the DNA was that our Poona Paul could be a son of Brian and Vivian Ellie, i.e. a brother to Jay and Kim. But Kim was deceased, Jay was living, there were no other missing brothers. So I'd come to this hypothesis after 11 days and I thought, well, there are no missing brothers in this family, you know. Maybe there's another answer. Maybe there is another situation, another couple that have married each other in this side and that side, and, you know, there's another solution. So I put this solution that I had, presented that to the Queensland Police, and we thought, right, this is it. We can continue on and see if we can research the Ellie family further, find out if there was a missing son, and I will continue to research for other possible answers.
Dr. Kirsty Wright is a world-renowned forensic biologist who has spent years tracing the identities of unknown Australian soldiers killed in battlefields around the world, going right back to World War I. And worked extensively on extracting and testing DNA from the bones of nameless people, just like Poona Paul. Kirsty spoke to me from her home on Queensland's Gold Coast. As a way of explaining how genetic genealogy actually operates, she told me about her work with the Australian War Dead.
So with the work that the Unrecovered War Casualties does for the Army and the Air Force, they look for distant relatives of missing Australian soldiers who were killed in World War One and World War Two. So we can get the DNA from the bones, and these bones are, you know, up to 100 years old from World War One. We can get the DNA, but we need something to match it to. We need a family member to be able to match it to. And obviously there's not close family members available. So we have a genealogist that makes these really large family trees, goes through dozens and dozens of public records to construct these family trees that can cover an entire table. Yeah. Often the soldier wasn't old enough to have their own family, so they have to trace way back into their past and then follow the branches all the way down to living family members. So they can be second and third cousins, and sometimes they may not even know that they have a relative that served and died in the war. So then that relative is contacted and they're asked to provide a sample of their own DNA so we can get an exact match between a living family member and a World War I soldier.
As a scientist, Dr. Wright says she is blown away by the possibilities of DNA and genetic genealogy. She said tapping into the genetic ancestry field opened up a whole new world of data and investigative resources.
And in terms of the success of that tool, if you'd like to call it that, is it not reliant upon, in many instances, for example, just ordinary members of the public who might be interested in unlocking their own family trees or in their millions are uploading DNA to these sort of heritage sites, and police with permission are able to tap into that incredible resource? How important is the public cooperation?
Yeah, I think that we've really seen in the last 10 to 20 years the use of these direct-to-consumer ancestry tests that people have become fascinated with. You know, they want to know who they are, where they come from, and they can voluntarily upload their DNA profile to publicly accessible genealogy databases such as GEDmatch or Family Tree DNA. And then the police can use the same kind of technology on a crime scene sample or a missing persons case and interrogate that DNA profile against, you know, many, many millions of DNA profiles. So the volume of DNA profiles and the proportion of the global population that are on these databases are absolutely staggering. So it's this ocean of information that now police are tapping into to resolve crimes and identify missing persons.
I asked Dr. Wright about her experiences tracking down the identities of ordinary people like Poona Paul, who for years, sometimes decades, remain unknown and seemingly lost to history. As Dr. Wright said, there must be a family member wanting to know what happened to their loved one. Detective Sergeant Chapman was optimistic about investigative genetic DNA and the Poona Paul case from the beginning.
The exciting thing about the unidentified deceased and the number of DNA profiles available to search against in the databases is significantly different as compared to a homicide. So if it's an unidentified human remains or a UHR case, more profiles are available for the police to search against, the law enforcement to search against. If it's a homicide case, you can only search against profiles in those databases where people have uploaded and opted in. So the exciting thing about the Poona Paul case is I knew I was going to have a lot of profiles to work with. And unidentified remains is what we, you know, refer to them as, but really that's somebody's father, potentially a brother. For him to be unidentified since 2008, I mean, there's a huge story in the background there if he can be identified.
In one of the biggest breakthroughs in the Poona Paul case, genetic genealogist Louise Coakley, in investigating the Alley family in New Zealand, tracked down some of his living relatives. One of Poona Paul's cousins agreed to speak for the first time to Breakthrough. She is Poona Paul's closest and last known genetic next of kin, and her name is Margot.
Something you know, maybe the Breakthrough police need. Please, if you have information which could assist an investigation in Australia, call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000 or go to crimestoppers.com.au. Your information could be the key to cracking the case.
Hello, Matt.
Hi, Margot. How are you?
Oh, it's good. We've got a power cut. It's okay. I've got someone else's phone.
Oh, great. I thought it was me. I thought I had the wrong number, wrong code, wrong this, wrong that. I thought, oh, no.
Meet Margot Calcott. Margot, in her early 60s, had a keen interest in her family history and, like many others, had uploaded her DNA profile to a genealogy website. She was fascinated with her grandmother, who had come to New Zealand from the United Kingdom aged 16. She needed to know more. Then a few years ago, she was contacted by Louise Coakley on behalf of the Queensland Police Service.
She hit my DNA, because I am on the DNA site. Mine was a hit, and a few of the my other relatives were hit too. But at that stage, we didn't know how close the hit was. And then she sent me an email when I'm thinking, oh, this is a hoax. But I looked at her name, and then I went and Googled her name.
Yes.
And sure enough, she was everything she said. So then I rang her and said, yep, I'm keen to have a chat. And so then she said, there's a few Harrises that are involved with this, and so we've all got hits on this, which was John Doe's mother's maiden name.
Yes.
She was a Harris. But at that stage, they didn't realise that we were very close, because it's my mother's sister, obviously. Now we know.
Family trees can be complicated. So let's take it step by step to understand how Poona Paul fits into this. Margot's grandparents were Mary and George Harris. Mary, as a young girl, came out to New Zealand from England and met George in Gisborne. They married and had three daughters, Vivian, Nanette, and Kay. Nanette was Margot's mother. Vivian, Margot's auntie, married a man called Brian Alley. Brian was about 10 years older than Vivian. Everyone called Vivian by her nickname, Bidge. That couple, in turn, had two sons, Jason, or Jay, and Kim. The families of sisters Vivian and Nanette were close.
So she was my aunt, Vivian, and Jay was my cousin. And we used to see a lot of them when we were younger because they owned pubs, so that was like our holiday. We'd go and visit them and stay in the pub, and Mum and Dad would be helping them in the bars and that at night. And we used to stay down in the little lounge area with the boys, yeah.
Some family trees are straightforward. Everything looks neat and clean and respectable. But other trees have secrets hidden in the leaves, little shadows and mistruths that only emerge on closer examination. The ultimate scientific truth, of course, is your DNA. It was DNA that led Queensland Police to Margot's doorstep, and it appears that DNA opened a secret door in the family tree of the Alleys and the Harrises. Poona Paul was the son of Vivian and Brian Alley, a son that nobody seemed to know about, a son who did not appear on any official records, a son who, for all intents and purposes, did not exist.
We're assuming here, maybe a logical assumption, that Poona Paul was born out of wedlock and adopted out.
Yes, exactly. There's not a lot of older people left that were close to my mother, but there has been one or two that I've been contacting and just talking to them about. I went and asked them if they noticed anything with Bidge, you know, whether she was wearing big coats, or because I'm sure that Mary and George would have felt very disgraced if everybody knew that she was pregnant. And I'm sure she would have been young. Mm. Well, you know, you sort of wonder whether she was 16, because she got married when I think she was 18.
The existence of Poona Paul naturally came as a shock to the whole family. Jay died last year. DNA tests proved conclusively that Jay Alley was a full biological brother to Paul. Before Jay passed away, he had a chance to talk to Margot about this long-lost brother of his.
Was Jay, before he passed, was he excited at the prospect that this older brother had emerged?
He rang me and he said, right, are you ready? And I said, yes. He said, right, you better sit down. And he went, oh, no, I'm just joking. I went, oh, no, I thought you were going to tell me some exciting news. And he said, well, it is exciting. And I said, what is it? And he said, he's my brother. And I went, no. He said, he is. He's my brother. He's my full brother. So we were shocked. Yeah. He would have been pushing to make sure that he would have found out who he was.
Yes. I mean, did he have his own children or grandchildren even?
Yeah. And that was one thing Jay did say to me, oh, I might have some nieces and nephews.
Wow.
He was excited because he never had them.
Yeah.
He never had children.
Well, it's very moving, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The surviving family members did a lot of soul searching, and it was Jay, prior to passing away, who managed to retrieve a snatch of remembered dialogue from the mists of time. He shared it with Margot.
At that stage, he was quite sick,
Mm. And he said, I remember, because they lived in hotels, so they had late nights, drinking a lot, and they had quite a feisty relationship. So he said, I remember when there was a mum and dad were having a big fight or argument, and the dad made a comment to mum, you killed our first child.
Oh, wow. So Jay recalled that.
Yeah, he recalled it, but he thought, oh, what are they talking about, you know? He didn't really understand it, but he said, now I do.
What happened to Paul? Was he adopted out at birth by Vivian and taken in by a local family? And did that family then move to Australia with their new child? Or did Paul grow up in New Zealand and migrate to Australia as an adult, seeking a new life? Did he have his own family? Did he have friends? After years of research, I asked Detective Sergeant Chapman his thoughts on Poona Paul's past.
I know in your work you don't act on suppositions, but with Poona Paul, let's try and work out what you think might have happened. Say he's born out of wedlock in that Gisborne area of New Zealand. What happens next? Was he secretly adopted? What do you think happened?
I mean, that's where it gets really difficult. It could have been a formal adoption, and obviously we checked all those through New Zealand Police and through the adoption records. It could have been an informal adoption where this person was given to another family who couldn't have kids, and you know, we don't know who that family was. Could have been an abandoned child. We just don't know. That's where it gets super tricky. And you know, whilst we went down the adoption route, you're talking mid to late 50s, certainly not digital records. And then you're looking at record keeping and how good their record keeping is. And you're talking 50, 60 years. So if it was a formal adoption through the correct processes, it wasn't surprising that we couldn't find records of it.
Okay, so somehow at some point he's made his way to Australia. That could have been with his adopted family, could have been later under his own steam. We can't theorise about that either, can we, with any certainty?
Not with any certainty, because we obviously did our checks here as part of the original missing persons investigation, and nothing came up as matching a missing person here. So potentially he flew to Australia months before he was found in 2008, or it could have been years before. He could have flown here as a child with his adopted family. That was part of, you know, the investigative route that I went down with immigration records. But unless you sort of know what his adopted family name was, you're absolutely stabbing
in the dark. Needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this day and age, how does a person completely disappear? According to Dr. Kirsty Wright, it's not as uncommon as you might think.
Is it possible that people in the 21st century, like potentially Poona Paul, can quite literally slip through the cracks and never claim an identity?
Oh, absolutely.
Genetic genealogist Louise Coakley explained that the case of Poona Paul was still one of being so close and yet so far away.
I mean, one of the great, I guess, ironies of your work and police work in this field is that we can have all of the latest and greatest technology that we wish.
Yes.
But again, it sometimes falls down if we go back and look at traditional old-fashioned paperwork and records.
Yes, yes. And that's the catch with genetic genealogy. It relies on both the DNA and the traditional genealogical research and historical records, and one without the other, it doesn't work. It has to be a combined tool.
Do you remember Margot's reaction when you first got in touch about this?
She was very, very helpful. She needed assistance, so I actually invited her to get online, you know, like Zoom, and I actually helped her, explained it to her and showed her on the screen, and she was really, really lovely and helpful, and she's been trying so hard. She's been going around and knocking on people's doors and going around to visit elderly friends of Vivian, you know, when she was much younger, to ask if they knew anything. So she's been looking at records and in mother and baby homes and things like that. Jay passed away last year, and she's now looking after his DNA results, which is great, and monitoring them, you know, just in case somebody else tests and it helps us work out who he is.
To
chasing leads and making breakthroughs, you can be a part of the team working to crack cases like this. Queensland Police Service is hiring. Head to policerecruit.qld.gov.au for all the information and incentives to join the QPS. That's policerecruit.qld.gov.au.
The case of Poona Paul highlights the now critical importance of DNA to all sorts of police investigations, from homicide to violent crime, right through to missing persons. Dr. Kirsty Wright applauded the Queensland Police Service's use of this latest technology and urged the public to upload their DNA for possible crime fighting into the future.
What would you say to just general members of the public who ordinarily would have absolutely nothing to do with any form of a police investigation and lead normal, uncomplicated lives? What would you say to them in terms of potentially encouraging them to upload their DNA samples to assist in this pool of information that just might help?
Oh, look, there's so many stories, Matt, where family members have uploaded their profile to these public databases, not knowing that they may have a relative that you know, may have been involved in quite a serious crime, a very distant relative, or may have a missing relative. So the public good that has come from ordinary members of the community uploading their DNA, the public good is absolutely staggering.
Detective Sergeant Chapman agrees.
I understand how people can be concerned about uploading their DNA to databases, but in this particular case, when you're trying to identify human remains, I don't see the negative side of it coming out, and that's my simplistic view of it. It's really something that can bring closure to a lot of people, and I just see good coming from it. When people upload their DNA to these databases, we use two databases. One's called GEDmatch and the other one's called FTDNA or Family Tree DNA. They're the two databases that cooperate with law enforcement. There is a lot of profiles in those databases, and I believe the answers in those databases.
Louise Coakley also strongly encouraged people to opt into DNA databases.
I just wanted you to respond to ordinary people out there who go about trying to investigate their family trees through these particular sites, who might balk at the idea of being somehow involved in a potential police investigation, to allay their fears. There is nothing to fear here. In fact, it is all positive, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Because even if they're closely related, we're not looking at them. We're looking at the owner of the DNA profile ultimately. And if they are happy to upload and opt in, you know, they probably never even know. I don't even need to know their names. It's just that tiny little bit of DNA. I need to know which branch it's down. That's all I need to know. So the use of genetic genealogy is helping to identify the owners of unknown DNA profiles, and whether that's for people such as adoptees and John and Jane Does, or for solving cold cases and keeping the community safe. But if there are any listeners who would like to help identify human remains and solve cold cases, they can easily do so in a few minutes, and it's completely free to download their DNA data file from their testing company and upload it to GEDmatch and Family Tree DNA and opt in to law enforcement matching.
And for this extraordinary technology to actually work at its optimum, it really needs an extensive pool of data. And this is simply contributing to that knowledge, isn't it?
It is. And there is very low awareness outside the genetic genealogy community. So everyone that we've contacted so far has never heard of GEDmatch or Family Tree DNA. They might have just done a DNA test at Ancestry, and they don't even realise there are other companies, or that in 5 minutes they could help solve cold cases, you know.
Yes.
So, and 99% of them are so willing to help. Oh, yes, I'll do it straight away. And it's just so lovely to have people so keen to help others.
She remained optimistic about the Poona Paul mystery being solved even after all this time.
Because somebody must know him. He must have a friend or a family member, child or a grandchild. Maybe he may not. You know, maybe he drank in the pub with some body, you know.
But it would be so good if somebody knew something, you know. Did they befriend somebody or see somebody in and around Nambour, you know, Puna Dam, you know, in that time period before then? Somebody must know something about him.
Detective Sergeant Scott Chapman said there was still a lot of work to do, and public cooperation could be vital in solving this enduring mystery.
One thing we haven't done that we're still trying to progress is New Zealand haven't run the DNA profile through their database, because under their legislation, it has to be a crime that you're investigating. And because, as we just spoke about this being a suicide, it doesn't fall under their legislation to run this through their database. So we've made requests through the Queensland coroner to liaise directly with the New Zealand coroner to see if anything can be done, because at the end of the day, this person is a New Zealand citizen by birthright. Mm. And, you know, potentially one of their citizens that went on a holiday and didn't come back. So he may be recorded in their database, or a family member may be recorded in their database. So we're asking New Zealand police to do a search of their database, a direct search and a familial search. That's one of my last sort of fingers crossed moments that may identify exactly who this is, because if he was arrested in New Zealand under his adopted name, then that's going to get the ball rolling and bring everything out.
What would you ask of this podcast's listeners in terms of what they could potentially do, how they could possibly help? Mm. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people will be listening to this and thinking it's a tragic scenario.
Yeah.
How can we assist in trying to resolve it?
Yeah, well, I guess family and friends of the Allies, no matter how sort of estranged or distant they may be, if they're aware of Vivian and Brian Alley having another son, or if they're aware that Vivian went through the adoption process, we'd certainly like to hear from them. I've spoken to some of Vivian's school friends to see if they can recall her being pregnant at school or going away for a certain amount of time where she may have had the baby and had it adopted. But the school friends I've spoken to just can't recall anything like that happening. So, you know, we're really trying to tap into family, friends and associates of the Allies who may be aware that Vivian had a child in the late 50s.
Even though DNA has traced Paul back to New Zealand, nothing is known about his life in Australia, and police are still desperately looking for the family who loved and raised him, for close friends and workmates, for his own children, if he had any. It's unlikely in life he was called Paul. But just think back to 2008. Do you recall a family member who inexplicably vanished, or someone who walked out on a full life, giving friends and family reasons for leaving that no longer add up? Do you remember a friend who was suddenly not there, or a workmate who simply didn't turn up for his job? What about the Kingaroy Video membership card? Did Puna Paul live in that town or region? Do you recall those distinctive tattoos? Someone knew this man. Someone interacted with him. How can you help? If you want to assist in cases like Puna Paul, you can upload your own DNA profile to either Family Tree DNA or GED Match. That is Family Tree DNA or GED Match, MATCH, and opt in for law enforcement access. This allows policing agencies worldwide to progress serious cases, including murders and sex crimes, and may help in identifying deceased persons like Paul. If you have any historical information about the Alley family, please contact the QPS. And again, if you wish to opt in, those sites are Family Tree DNA or GED Match. If you have any information that might help identify Puna Paul, please call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000. That's 1-800-333-000. Or online at crimestopperscqueensland.com.au. That is crimestopperscqld.com.au. Marg, who lives near Puna Dam and saw the police on the day his body was discovered all those years ago,
still thinks about Paul and wonders if he has a family out there.
Have you ever thought now and again about him and what his life might have been and why he ended up where he did?
For a while in the beginning, I was sort of like, gee whiz, like no one needs to sort of go like that and family need to be found. Then it went really, really quiet, and it has only been sort of the last maybe couple of years, I think it would be, that there's been, I suppose, a rise in questions. I think the police questioned a couple of other local neighbours maybe 18 months or so ago and that sort of thing. So sort of brought it to the attention that, oh, maybe something's shown up.
So, I mean, the police, you're right, have never let it rest, even through a very long passage of time, but obviously it would be wonderful to get some sort of resolution.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone needs closure. If family are found, then family need to know they've lost a loved one.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
The QPS and Breakthrough would especially like to thank Dr. Xanthi Mallett and CC Moore of Parabon Nanolabs and the tireless efforts of Louise Coakley. We're also grateful to Paul's New Zealand relative, Margot, and his late brother, Jay, who greatly assisted the QPS with this podcast episode. In our next episode, Queensland police take down a romance scam, and you have to hear it to believe it.
But I don't have, I only have a half of it, though.
Like, how much do you have right now?
Around 10. 10,000, is it?
100,000.
10.
Is that what you have? 100,000?
Yeah. And
is it cash?
Yeah.
Is it in your house or in the bank?
Something you know, maybe the breakthrough police need. Please, if you have information which could assist an investigation in Australia, call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000 or go to crimestoppers.com.au. Your information could be the key to cracking the case.